Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
So, Doc, it is no secret that I am a wordsmith, or at least I pretend to be.
Yes.
Not a word snob, although, I am a stickler for language.
Yes.
You know, I love to read.
You're constantly correcting me
when
I mispronounce.
Well, not in a bad way. When you mispronounce words.
Yeah, but I really mispronounce
or spellings.
Them too. Yes.
But, you know, but you always say that, you always joke with me because I'm always reading stuff. I always pick up stuff in the bathroom or, like, at the grocery store. I'm always, I love to
read
everything.
Whether it's a book, a pamphlet, a newspaper, a flyer, yeah. Whatever it is, you're going to
read. I just love words. Yes. I love the beauty of words. And for me, I particularly love, like, the ways in which words, you know, shape American society or vice versa. And so I'm really excited, y'all, to welcome back to the show. Now, he's been on the podcast twice over the last 5 years. So please welcome. He is from the American Dialect Society. He's the vice president. Welcome back to the show, y'all, Grant Barrett. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
Wonderful. So good to have you back after a couple of years, Grant. Let our listeners know, in case they have not heard in the past, what is the American Dialect Society? What do you all do? And then why do you all create a list of words of the year?
The American Dialect Society is a bunch of linguists and lexicographers and students of language and some amateurs, too, who study the way Americans talk. So it's not only the way we talk in English, but the way we talk in other languages and how each language influences each other. There's a lot of dialect work, the way different parts of the country or even the continent talk differently from each other. And the organization's been around since the late 1800s. We do the Word of the Year and have since, I believe, 1990, because we kind of wanted to draw some attention to linguistics as a profession. And a real easy way to draw people's eye to the field is to say, this is how language is changing. And isn't that interesting?
Yeah. One thing I've noticed from looking at Words of the Year, like there are people, for example, word snobs who are really sticklers for language. They feel like the Queen's English or the King's English is the only way to go. But I've noticed over the last few years, Grant, that a lot of kind of just like slang words or pop culture inventions have become important parts of communication. To what degree, is it important that we allow language to change? And then to what degree is it that we also maintain kind of the way things have been? You know what I mean when I ask that question? Like, to what degree is slang part of important communication?
Yeah, it's not just slang, it's everything. It's the new language in different fields, in different businesses, new language that comes from new kinds of cultural conflicts or cultural contact. The thing is, you can't stop language change. It is inevitable. We don't sound like Shakespeare, and Shakespeare didn't sound like people a few hundred years before him. Yet there's this continuum of English being English slowly, gradually changing. And when you take snapshots, say 100 or 200 or 300 years apart, then you can really see the change. But on the day-to-day basis, we tend not to notice it. However, as you pointed out, we really do talk a lot about slang and new words in a way that we didn't used to. And a lot of it has to do with the rise of everyday communication in the hands of everybody. Whereas say, even just 30 years ago, you were barely producing a fraction of the text that somebody is today. Today, you're basically writing an encyclopedia every year through all the social media, whatever you happen to be typing on. It's on your laptop, it's on your phone, what have you. And you're consuming a lot more than you were too. So a lot more people have a more on-the-ground opportunity to observe language change around them. That's not to say that language change wasn't happening before the internet age, but people weren't paying very much attention to it because it was a hell of a lot harder to do. Yeah. It's easy now. And fortunately for people like me who track language change and new words, I love it. I've got all these different tools at my disposal where I can call attention to new words and new usages and so forth. That said, I think it's really important to understand that it is really slowly moving. Even though it seems like it's moving fast, it's only because human beings, all of us included, we like new things. We look at change with an interested eye. We appreciate novelty. And we make a big deal out of novelty, whereas the language as a whole is really a very slow-moving river, and all the new words are nothing but fireflies along the shore. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Are there any words that, over the past several years, that are your favorite? Like, particularly, like, any slang terms that you kind of find yourself using or, you know, just words that stand out to you that you try to insert in everyday conversation.
But let's not go over this year's list.
I mean, so not think about, this year. Because
I'm going to quiz you, Doc, in a second. But, okay, thinking of 2016 or before, what are some of your favorite things that have appeared on the list?
Oh, that's like asking me to choose my favorite child. They're all my favorite.
They're all your favorites.
Yes. Okay,
I will tell you, and this isn't the place for it, but I have a sideline in taboo language. And I do occasionally do, in my other life as the co-host of a public radio show called The Way with Words, I do public speaking. And one of the things that I do is I talk about naughty stuff. And so I keep a list of naughty language that has kind of popped up, and just try to be observant and think about the way that plugs into the larger fabric of language. Like I said, that's not really appropriate here. But
it's totally appropriate because Kyla has a potty mouth. And so I was going to say, when we do our Straight Through After Hours, our next podcast, you have to come back and talk about some of those potty words because y'all will be a perfect combination.
Yes.
Oh, that's delightful. I would love to have a partner in crime.
I want to ask you, Grant, about let's talk about African-American English vernacular, like Ebonics, right? And I think that for many years in the past, people sought to discredit Ebonics or Black vernacular or Black speak, but it seems like anymore, a lot of words that originate in Black spaces, whether it be things like on fleek, which was a phrase of the year a few years ago, or stay woke, or even things like shade or throw in shade, so even things that have become part of popular communication really originate in Black communities. Can you talk a bit about the value or even the ways in which Black folk in particular can influence popular language?
Oh man, that's huge.
I know that's a big question.
I'm not the expert on it, but I can give you a couple of references to people who are. But I will say first, most linguists don't use the term Ebonics because it has all these political implications. It's usually seen as derogatory. So we usually say Black English or African-American vernacular English, or African-American English, something like that. You might call it AAVE, or some people pronounce it as AVE.
Okay.
So African-American vernacular English or Black English are probably the best terms for it. That said, anytime you have a group of people who have a strong cultural identity and where they tend to look to their own community for support and romantic partners and family life and personal life, and they do things together, they will develop an in-language. That in-group will develop a language of its own. African Americans are a huge in-group in the United States. Although they are a minority in the larger picture of things, there are a lot of African Americans. And that's not to say that all African Americans speak alike, but they do develop patterns of language. A lot of it, for example, we can look at the patterns of language of African Americans in Chicago and New York and other cities and see connections to when the great migration of Black Americans from the South happened, when they moved to the North for these factory jobs after World War II. Yeah. It's really interesting stuff. There's a ton more to say about that. I will point something out to you. You guys are going to love this. There's a documentary that's being shown on college campuses around the country called Black English, and it's by the North Carolina Language and Life Program at North Carolina State University. And Walt Wolfram and the gang there have put this documentary together to try to make people understand a lot of these myths that people have about Black English, which is really, really, really need to let those go. You know what I'm saying? We just really need to stop thinking about African-American vernacular English or Black English as wrong. And stop thinking about it as a collection of errors, because it's systematic. It has rules. It behaves according to an internal rule set that shows that it's a dialect of English, and it's a big dialect of English. So this documentary that I highly recommend to you all and everyone who's listening is called Talking Black in America. They're doing showings all across the country, and you can find more out about it at the North Carolina Language and Life website on the Internet.
I love that.
Forward to that. Yeah,
Doc, are
that
you
out.
Ready for your quiz?
Okay,
so I'm gonna ask you. I'm gonna give you a word or a phrase. Ask you for your definition, and then we'll check in with Grant and see if you're on the right track. Okay.
Okay.
They get progressively harder.
Okay.
So the first one, I'll give you an easy one. Pussy hat. Tell us about what do you think a pussy hat is or does or whatever.
Okay, they're a symbol of solidarity for the women's marches that they were invented. For the women's marches to protest and advocate for reproductive justice in light of 45 and the Donald Trump era. And I mean,
okay, Judge.
you win my voice on your answering machine.
Yay.
All right, there we go. All right, yeah, so pussy hats were pink knitted hats, of course, worn by demonstrators at the women's march. What about the phrase take a knee?
Take a knee has to do with the NFL protest started by Colin Kaepernick in terms of protesting black, you know, advocating for Black Lives Matter and protesting the Korean Industrial Complex and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Grant, is that right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay, all
Now, how about this one? Digital blackface. What do we mean
digital,
by that?
Digital blackface is the practice of white digital users using black memes and or GIF files to convey feelings, emotions, so on and so forth when there's a plethora of white celebs and GIFs that they could use. But, you know, again, a lot of times the black memes and the black GIFs are just better. And so white users tend to express themselves through these as opposed to ones that reflect their own identity.
Yeah, that's true. And I would add another element is sometimes it's not clear when white people use memes and GIFs of black people that they're not doing it with some kind of racial bias or racial overtone in a kind of mocking way.
Yeah, so true. Yeah.
Now, this is one, Grant, I'll come straight to you for because I'm sure neither of us knows the answer to this. But the word that won under the category of digital word of the year is a word called shitpost. What is a shitpost? I mean, we could probably figure it out through context clues, but what is a shitpost?
There are a couple different definitions. The one that I like is it's a post that you make on a site like Reddit just to get karma or get comments or just to draw attention to yourself. It's just the minimum bare effort that you put on social media just to get some kind of response out of other people.
Okay.
Of course, I never make those. All right, Doc, here we go. this is under the category of slang / informal word of the year.
Okay.
Why people? I'll spell it for you. WYPIPO.
That's like a lot of folks, particularly folks of color, use that spelling to basically spell white people, but yeah. Facebook has been doing a lot of scrutinizing and policing. When people make posts that say white people do this or white people do that, they tend to get blocked or get put in Facebook jail, especially.
Yeah.
And so they've now created this kind of acronym or little
other
like,
spelling,
you know, other type of spelling, so people don't naturally see it and be like, I'm going to report you,
it.
And it's against community standards.
And Grant, that when you use that particular spelling of the word, there's usually you're usually signifying or implying. What, like cluelessness or white privilege or that kind of a thing, right? Like it's a certain kind of white person when you say that phrase, right?
Yeah, it's treating all white people as a whole according to probably their worst characteristics rather than their best ones. And there's a couple different spellings of that too. I've also seen YTPIPO without the W.
Absolutely.
And I've seen it also white people, DWIGHT, like the name
Dwight.
Yes,
that's my favorite, Dwight, the Dwights, yes. let's see. This is one in keeping with this theme. How about caucasity? Doc, what is caucasity?
It's like akin to Beckery, where it's, again, white cluelessness because of privilege and the way in which race is understood and taught. A lot of white folks will say things or do things on social networks that it's like, oh, my goodness. You know, so like news stories where, you know, a white woman does this or a white man does this, and it's clearly indicative of their privilege and cluelessness around white supremacy.
Yeah. Grant, it's a mix of Caucasian and audacity, right?
Yeah, that's right. And definitely a notion of cluelessness.
Yeah.
By the way, you just taught me a word. I hadn't heard Beckery. I love
the Beckery. The Beckery is so funny.
So that's our official submission for next year's Word of the Year.
Okay, the Beckery.
We'll take our residuals, our royalties.
Can I guess at the meeting?
Yes.
The meaning
sure.
of it?
Yes.
Is it being a Becky? Like being a stereotypical white girl?
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, and the word Becky, and it's so funny because my best friend, who's actually a black woman, is named Becky, and now she goes by Rebecca because of Beyonce's Becky with the good hair and also this notion of Beckery all over the place. But, yeah, I mean, it's this kind of typical white girl who doesn't know what's going on or has, you know, might know what's going on but still does stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, even though Justin Timberlake is a man, like his, you know, Super Bowl performance would be caucasity as well as Beckery.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a great guess, Grant. And you actually get to win our voices on your voicemail because you got that correct.
All right. I'll never erase them.
There you go. So this is my favorite word. Although it did not win Word of the Year, it did win under the category of WTF Word of the Year, Doc Kofefe.
What?
Or Kofifi.
Kofifi.
Or Kofefe, depending on. I'll spell it for you. COVFEFE. Kofefe or Kofifi?
Okay, I don't know.
You
I have no idea.
Okay,
no.
Grant, it's my favorite. Tell us the origins of Kofefe or Kofifi.
Oh, this was the Donald Trump tweet. Remember?
Yes.
He, like, halfway through a tweet, there's this random string of letters, COVFEFE, and the internet, of course, had a field day trying to figure out what this guy was doing. And it's not even like he fat-fingered it. He has small hands, so who knows what he was typing.
Very small hands. Yeah, that was absolutely.
Oh, my God, I don't even.
Because I'm a word person, but also a political junkie, that to me was the most epic thing that happened, Kofefe. And so really, Doc, it can signify really anything. You're having a great day, Kofefe. Today was a disaster work. This was a total Kofefe. I mean, you could really use it, But let's hop right to the top of the list. Grant, why don't you reveal to us and our listeners what the word of the year was according to you all's list?
It's real news that the word of the year was fake news. And I know I realize that that's two words, but we take a very loose definition of word for the word of the year vote.
And so what exactly, what is or what was fake news over this last year?
Well, one of the reasons that it was nominated is because when fake news as an expression first appeared, in the public sphere, it really meant fake news. It meant these, stories like a child prostitution ring being run out of a pizza restaurant in D.C., like the utterly, completely false, totally invented news. But then other people started using fake news to accuse real news with facts and honest reporting behind it, of being fake. So it's one, disinformation or falsehoods presented as real news, or two, actual news that is claimed to be untrue, and usually for political advantage or just because one can't own up to one's own mistakes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And the most obvious example, is 45. And you think about his inauguration when he claimed that his inauguration was the most attended and most viewed ever. And then they had the aerial shots. And so, of course, we consider that to be fake news, that this was the most well-attended. But he considered reports that it was not the most well-attended to be fake news. And so we have 45 to thank for the advent, I suppose, and proliferation of that particular phrase. So
okay, made up.
Yes. Hey, Grant, it has been a delight to have you back. Thank you so much for coming back and joining us again to talk about Words of the Year. Well, can we do it again next year?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I love you guys. Thanks for calling.
I love you back. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care. Cheers.
So, Doc, that was a list of words of the year.
Yes.
But there's another list that caught my eye as well online. I saw this list on theroot.com. It was written by an author, Clarkeisha Kent, who made a hilarious list called the top 10 moments Black people won in 2017.
Yeah,
I love Black people even more than I love words. And so we just had to get to the show. So listeners, please welcome to the show, Clarkeisha Kent. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How are you guys?
Wonderful. Good. Thank you for being with us. And so, like I said, I checked out your list on theroot.com and I was just in love with it because you did a wonderful job of highlighting just how awesome of a year Black people had last year. We basically won 2017, right?
We did.
Yeah, so I want to go over with you, and I'd love to hear your commentary. Let me scroll down. I'm going to start at the bottom, and we're going to talk about just some of the things, moments that happened in pop culture, and I'd love to hear your reflections, actually for both of you, all about those moments and what they meant for Black people. Cool?
Right. Yeah, all right. Of course. I'm ready.
So number 10 on your list, and I'm not a sports person, but I did catch this headline. So LeBron James called Donald Trump by his name, quote unquote, bum. Talk a bit about that moment. That was actually in a tweet, right?
That was the tweet, yeah.
What happened?
He literally's like, you bum. He's talking about Steph Curry already said he ain't going. So there ain't no invite. Going to the White House was a great honor until you showed up. So it just, I loved that tweet because it was just so blunt. Like, it was so blunt, went straight to the point, and kind of like, I know we say, blackness isn't a monolith and, we're all different and we try not to be like, okay, I speak for all Black people. But I honestly was like, I feel like every Black person felt that in that moment. Like, we're so sick ever since, he was elected by the other side of America. I feel like there's that collective kind of in that feeling, I don't want to say dread, but that kind of meh feeling in the air for us where we're kind of like, he is a bum. Like, we don't like him. We don't like the fact that he's running the country. Like, he's making stuff unnecessarily hard for us.
For everybody.
For other underrepresented, groups in the country. So, like, we're definitely, like, we don't vibe with him at all. We don't like him. We just don't.
For context, I guess it was about the basketball people, the team winning the basketball tournament, whatever it's called. And so, as usually happens.
The basketball tournament.
The Super Bowl or the World Series or whatever. But they usually get an invitation.
NBA Finals.
There you go, the NBA Finals. But the winning team usually gets an invitation to the White House, and that happens with, yeah. with the, I mean, that just works with the Super Bowl, and so yeah. there's talk about the Philadelphia team not going. And,
yeah, the those, Eagles they, don't want to go.
The Eagle, there we go, the Eagles.
They paid it.
And so in this particular case, there was talk about whether or not Steph Curry would visit, and Donald Trump said something like, well, I just may uninvite these people. And so LeBron is like, look, you little bum. Like, he already said he ain't coming anyway, you know? And so that was, I think it's really cool when, because I think a lot of people, especially talking heads and politics, tread so lightly when it comes to 45. You know, like, well, you know, like Omar will say, well, he's not racist. He's racist adjacent. Or, you know, the ways in which people tiptoe around, mm-hmm. calling it what right. it is. And LeBron James like, look, you're a bum, you know?
No, basically. Right.
Loved it, loved like, it. So number no, nine on your list, of course, is the Black people do horror and do it well. It was a success of the movie Get Out. Talk a bit about your thoughts about Get Out, Clarkeisha. The doc, I want to hear from you. Have you seen the movie Get Out?
Yes, I have. Yes.
What'd you all think about it?
Yes, I love the movie. I saw it multiple times. I also just got the DVD recently, so
yes,
I was
DVD.
Waiting for it to come out. I needed to like fall down price just a little bit. So it just a great movie because like there's a rich tradition of Black horror that doesn't get touched on as much. It doesn't get taught as much in higher institutions too. Because I went to a very, very white institution. And you know, unless you're going out to go seek it and find it, like it's not going to pop up to you initially. But basically Jordan Peele in his like debut, literally his debut, like film debut, directs this really awesome horror that centers like, you know, a Black man and kind of like takes these horror aspects and applies them to social commentary. So it just is wild. Like if you haven't seen it, you have to see it. I can't really explain it. But basically, as a, you know, a debut like filmmaker, you know, it could be 50-50. Either it's going to be awesome or it's not going to be awesome.
And in that case, it was awesome. I mean, he killed it at the Oscars. I mean, he's got nominations. I think it was like one of the first movies to get a perfect score on Rotten Tomatoes. So he was just killing it. And it was especially cool because I think you know, we do have a history of like Black horror films, you know, kind of like B-list movies. But in mainstream horror films, the Black person usually dies first. You know what I'm saying?
And I love that he kind of took all this creative license to basically say that Black people's main horror is social inequality.
Yeah,
white supremacy, racism, white supremacist fascination with our bodies in particular. Mm-hmm. So it brought, you know, it called on like all this history and all the contemporary obsession around.
And of course, the
Blackness
great thing
too.
Is white
I mean,
people called it a comedy, right? So it gets nominated, right? We look at it like it's a horror film, like, yeah,
right.
we really scared of this.
Yeah, this
like, oh, it's such a good comedy. It's like, y'all, this ain't no comedy.
And he did it with a group of white folks that would see themselves as uber liberal, right? Yeah. So like all this hinting at we're not like racist white people, right? I voted for Obama and like all these things are thrown in there basically saying like, no, it doesn't matter who the white people identify themselves to be. Black people know who they are, right? And so, I mean, it was brilliant.
I loved it. So number eight on the list was My Baby Daddy, Colin Kaepernick. He got the last laugh. You know, I think the NFL, he doesn't know it yet, but the NFL owners really tried to shut him out because of this knee situation. They really tried their damnedest. They tried their best to alienate Colin to really kind of blacklist him. And I think that despite the fact that he was not able to play football, he really did win in other ways. I mean, he had his money going on. He never bowed. He never broke. And he turned around and sued them, too. He turned around and sued the NBA owners. NFL owners, which required them, of course, which is going to require them to have to release all the emails and documents to figure out, is there a conspiracy? Was there a conspiracy to blacklist him? You know, and then he turns around and becomes GQ's Person of the Year and had that really, really cool spread in the magazine. So I think he was a wonderful example of Black resilience and Black defiance. And, you know, like I said, he's my baby daddy, and I just love him so much. Number seven on your list, Clarkeisha, was my favorite film of the year, Moonlight. Talk a bit about what you loved about Moonlight last year.
What I loved about Moonlight, first of all, is the freaking lighting and how Black people look in the movie. Like, I cannot tell you enough as, because I was a film student for a couple of years at the University of Chicago. I cannot tell you how underrated, like, how much people don't think about how to light Black skin, how to film it on camera. Like, Jesus, like, it just, people don't think about it enough. So I'm telling you, that movie just took its time with how to kind of show how beautiful our skin is on film. Like, it was such a beautiful movie. The lighting was great. And the story, obviously, very important to people who identify as both Black and queer.
Yeah.
So it's just a really, really amazing movie.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, Doc, we loved it because, you know, Terrell Alvin McCraney, the playwright on which the movie was based, is your friend from college, friend to the show, has been on Strange Fruit, and it was epic because I remember the night of the Oscars. You know, I was at my little neighborhood bar, Doc. You know what I'm saying? So we had been watching the Oscars, and they had just announced that La La Land had won, right? And so then like, that happened, and we, like, changed the channel. And then, like, either you texted me or something happened, and I'm on Twitter or Facebook, and people's like, oh, hold up.
I know.
And
I'm like, screaming.
What? Like, I had just turned the channel at the bar. You know, I went to go drink my drink and playing pool. And then people were like, no, Moonlight won. And so it was just an epic moment. I mean, it was even more surreal than the whole Steve Harvey thing with those, like, beauty queens. Like, he, like, read the wrong
way.
Like, it just was really magical. And
it was.
You know, for the reason that it was Black produced, for the reason that it was an untold story of queerness, but it wasn't just about queerness, it was about masculinity, it was about the inner city, it was about Black, it was about so much. That it really was just a movie that really, really, really won, and so we're really excited about that. So keep moving up the list. I'm going to move along, y'all. We had the Roy Moore race in Alabama, and the fact that Black women overwhelmingly and then Black men shortly there behind them basically got to the race together. Doc, what do you remember about that race?
Yeah, I remember. It was a kind of phenomenal night. I mean, you wanted him to be unseated. You wanted, you know, Moore to win. No, not Moore, right?
Yeah, no, Moore was the one we wanted to lose.
Yeah,
yes.
We wanted Moore. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. We wanted Moore to lose.
Doug
right?
Jones who, is who
yes.
won, yes.
Jones, right? We wanted Jones to win. But again, Black women did it yet again, right? Yeah. So just like when it came to 45 and the presidential election, Black women kind of showing out in droves and overwhelmingly not voting for 45. And in this case, it was, you know, it was Black women yet again, overwhelmingly getting Jones up in there. So, I mean, it was a phenomenal moment. And it just showed that, you know, it seems as if Black women, because of that intersection of race and gender, seem to always be politically astute and savvy when it comes to making designations.
Absolutely.
They just know what they're doing, you know? Yeah.
Now, no matter what list comes out any time of the year, there's one family that's bound to be on the list in one way, shape, or form, and that's the Kardashians. So number five on this list, I know everybody remembers last year, one of the Kardashians in particular, that's Kendall Jenner, one of the younger sisters. She got her edges collected and handed to her in a basket because, Doc, of what commercial? Do you remember?
No, what was
she was
the
drinking
commercial?
That soda. Clarkeisha, what was she drinking?
It was the Pepsi.
Remember that was a commercial? It was like a BLM. It was almost like a BLM rally.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And she pops through the streets and she hands the officer a Pepsi.
Oh, my God,
and gives the protest the Pepsi and there's world peace.
And everyone gathered her.
Maybe. But, you know, it was so insensitive and it was so ridiculous. And, child, the children, Carkeisha, were not here for Kendall, were they?
We were not, and there were some things I wanted to point out. On top of that offensive part where she, like, throws her fake little blonde wig at the only Black chick in the, you know, video, basically. It's also the fact that I thought it was so unbelievable that she was walking up to these cops, handed this Pepsi, and A, they didn't beat her ass, and two, the second part, two, they were all attractive.
All the cops? Yes. Cops. Unbelievable.
Okay.
No, yeah, okay.
I'm like, what lies are this? Oh, there's a bunch of lies happening.
Okay,
so
not real.
When, you know, the director, because no, absolutely not.
Touche. That was a great point. Number four on the list, Doc, which I'm sure you appreciate, of course, your favorite person. Speaking of baby mamas, your baby mama, Beyonce. Announced her pregnancy.
Yes!
Which she's since given birth, right?
Yeah, she has the twins.
Oh, yeah. Do you know their name? What are their names?
Oh, my God. And I actually don't. And what? I knew you were going to ask me that.
Do you know their names?
I got you. It's Sir and Rumi.
Yes,
that's right.
Sir
that's
Rumi,
right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
And her twins.
And she did that little photo shoot with the little like
yes,
with the flowers in the back and the little organza, like the little organza, little veil.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Again, iconic. And of course, the thing I love about Beyonce, anything she announces, y'all. She puts it on Instagram, and then you have all the bootleg versions, right?
Yes,
people
I
trying
love
to
when
emulate.
People emulate her. Yes, that's my favorite thing.
Yes.
I want to do it, too, every time, but I'm not going to use myself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use myself.
Number three on your list, Clarkeisha, which was a really, really touching moment from the Emmy Awards, was Anika Noni Rose and Cicely Tyson on stage together. What happened during that exchange?
Yes, so they basically were announcing, I don't remember what exactly they're announcing, but they're announcing basically the next kind of group to come up to get awarded. And, you know, Cecily, she was kind of stumbling over her words, and she and I guess it wasn't coming to her, she wasn't remembering what was going on. And, you know, Anika just, you know, like, you know, we see with, like, daughters or, like, granddaughter just leans over and just kind of, like, you know, comforts her and kind of tells her what to do next. Or I don't remember what exactly whispered because I wasn't there. But she lovingly tells her what to do next. And, you know, it's a really smooth but also touching moment. Because she could have easily looked annoyed. She could have easily kind of, you know, it could have went left. Like, she
Anika did a wonderful job of gently encouraging and supporting Cicely Tyson in the ways that which, you know, it was really touching for me. Those of us with parents or grandparents or people, you know, who are near and dear to us, who are older, and she kind of, in that moment, I guess it would be intimidating for anyone to be in front of that crowd and to kind of forget their words. And Anika just is like, take your time. She gently grabs her elbow, like, take your time. It's all good. I think that level of patience, I think, was really cool to see in a time and in a field where most people would act annoyed or might just use their lines on your behalf or kind of, you know, ridicule you. Yep. I think it was a really, really touching moment to see that happening among the generations. And so I think that was a really, really wonderful time to see Black tenderness and Black love. Number two on your list, as we get to the top of the list, is Michelle Obama and the side eye scene around the world.
That was the best.
You remember that, Doc? Yes. What do you think? Michelle Obama, really lightweight, she slept on, but she really is like the queen of memes as well.
Yes.
But, you know, Michelle Obama did not play when it came to the side eyes, to the looks that she gave. Mm-mm. She basically was the queen of everything.
Basically.
Doc, who do you think made number one on this list of the 10 times Black people won in 2017?
Auntie.
She's everybody's auntie. The one and only Maxine Waters.
Yes.
Maxine Waters. Listeners, you will remember that it was during a testimony there in D.C., and she was asking a question of a person who kept deflecting. It was Stephen Munchkin, I think his name is. He kept deflecting and deterring and not giving her a straight-up answer, and every time he started speaking, you know, kind of get limited amounts of time to ask her question and get answered. She said,
Reclaiming my time.
And I loved it. Every time he began to open his mouth to give a falsehood or give some kind of, you know, deflection, she reclaimed her time. And Clarkeisha, that really was the phrase heard around the world, huh?
Yep, it was. It was. That was actually my mood for the rest of the year. I was just like, when someone, you know, comes, derail me, or cut me off or anything like that, I just, I'm reclaiming my time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Just say it over again until they shut up. So,
yeah, that was cool. Well, I'll tell you what, Clarkeisha, thank you so much. You are a writer, again, listeners, a writer for TheRoot.com. Folks can check out your writing there. But thank you so much for compiling this list and reminding us just how awesome last year was for Black people. And hopefully this year will be even better. You take care, okay?
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
All right, so our thanks to Clarkeisha Kent. That was a fun conversation about all the ways the Black people won last year. Doc, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm excited to introduce to our audience, I also met them in person for the first time today, a Facebook friend of mine. I'm a big fan of their work. It is an author, a writer, who now lives in Louisville, Olivia Cole.
Yes.
So when we come back, we're going to talk to Olivia about her writing, but then also about a wonderful art exhibit that Olivia is curating, and she's looking for some young girls and women to do that. So let the people know who we are.
You're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
My third item is a VHS cassette.
This is a 1940 edition of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None.
This is a piece of coral.
My third thing is a scar that I have on my neck.
Ragdoll that I was given by my mother when I turned 7.
5 things. It's like show and tell for grown-ups. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't miss a thing.
Welcome back. You're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
So I mentioned, listeners, before the break that I'm a big fan of this person. Their social media stay popping, and they are winning because their books are all over, like, the list of. And I'm not really a sci-fi person, but, you know, I don't watch Harry Potter. Is Harry Potter sci-fi or fantasy?
I mean, Harry Potter is like fantasy, and but again, we're like much older than
like that. Yeah,
like MJ. You know, shout out to MJ. How you doing? Yeah. MJ is an uber obsessed Harry Potter fan, and in fact went to the last film by herself.
Not dressed up as Harry Potter.
No. Okay. She doesn't do cosplay or anything, but by herself so she can shed tears because it was that
she
meaningful.
Cried, but is Harry Potter the kind of that evokes? Well, you know, I did watch Hunger Games
for a lot of my students.
Hunger Games. I'm not sure if Hunger Games is sci-fi, but I liked it. And the only reason I watched Hunger Games is because of.
Oh, my goodness. Jennifer Lawrence.
From Louisville. Okay. So let's just go ahead and bring in. Welcome to the show, Olivia Cole, y'all.
Thank you.
Olivia
Thank
A. Cole. You. Olivia, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for being here. So let me just ask you, first of all, is Harry Potter, Is Hunger Games, is that sci-fi? Is that the right genre?
So Harry Potter is probably fantasy. Okay. You got wizards and magic and stuff.
Okay.
And then Hunger Games is really, I consider that kind of more like a speculative. That's a dystopian book. Oh. So it's like dystopian. Under the speculative.
Yes. I can't make
like the Maze Runner and stuff. Like Maze Runner. And,
yeah, right.
So what is your genre? What do you, tell us about your area.
Yeah. So my first two books in my original series, I call it the Tasha Trilogy. The third book isn't out yet. So it will be a trilogy. It's not yet.
Okay.
But the first two books, Panther in the Hive and the Rooster's Garden, those are speculative, so that kind of falls under that
bucket.
So
I would like them. We go.
You would like those. And you know what? I brought you this book, and now I'm like, you're not gonna like this, but it's science fiction. So this one's science fiction, and the other two are speculative.
Okay.
But they kind of like, there's like the speculative bucket, and then there's like the science
other
fiction fantasy.
All
stuff.
Yeah, I could do buckets and branches.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed we were searching. I noticed that Octavia Butler. Now, of course, that's the most famous that I know of, like kind of black sci-fi writer.
The mother
of
sci-fi.
Was that inspiration for you, or what kind of led you? Talk to us a bit about what led you to become a writer in this particular realm, even.
Yes. You know, I've always been a writer, really, since I was at Fern Creek Elementary. Hey.
Yes, Fern Creek.
And I started as a poet, really, and I read all kinds of poetry. Ursula Le Guin, who recently passed, RIP, she wrote speculative and science fiction and all that kind of stuff. But she also wrote poetry also, and I consider myself a poet for the longest. But then I got into writing zombie stuff, and that just kind of took me down that road.
Yes.
I guess Louisville has like a zombie walk or something.
Two zombie walks that actually sued one another.
What?
Because somebody saw this, and Laura, you probably know this scene, right? They had one zombie walk.
Get out.
Which started is a really late thing. So it started because some friends, like it was my birthday, right? So we would all get together, three of us would get together, dress up as zombies, and do our like bar crawl. So that picked up steam. More people started joining. So it becomes more than just the birthday party. So there's that zombie walk, but then someone else like co-ops it and has zombie like march. Same route, the same neighborhoods, and sponsors get confused. And so they actually like assuring each other.
Oh my
It's nasty.
God. And everybody's just I just picture all these zombies in court, like still with
basically,
the rags
on. You know, that's like hashtag white people problems. It's like, y'all really, y'all all zombies and y'all suing each other.
I
digress. But yeah, so Louisville has this little zombie thing.
That's amazing. I think that's what really got me into kind of originally, writing outside of poetry. But then somebody, I almost said discovered, but I'm trying to stop myself from using that word lately. A friend of mine put me on to Octavia Butler. I think at the end of high school, beginning of college. And I've been speculative science fiction ever since. She's the mother of science fiction.
Okay.
She's just incredible. And she actually, and I said this in an article recently, but everybody knows it who's read her, is that she, Donald Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again, she actually predicted that years ago in her book, The Parable of the Talents. Yeah, in her little series, she predicted there will be a horrible candidate like him, Make America Great Again. And it was in her book. And she's amazing.
She's that's like chilling.
Isn't it? It is.
Yes.
That's why you should read speculative and watch those because they tell
very
you what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
People,
yeah.
think, people think that it's made up, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
How easy or difficult is it? Because this is like, this is a for real book, okay? This is not a self-published.
There's
no shade to, self-published, but it's not a comic. It's like a real book, Doc.
Substantial. Yes, very substantial.
How easy, you've written books before, and I know from you that it's not an easy process.
No.
Your work is scholarly work, but like how easy or difficult is it from your perspective, Olivia, to write a book?
Oh,
man. Doc, I wonder if it's the same for you.
I want to hear what you have to say first, because I didn't know you were a writer. What do you write?
Yeah, no. I mean, I wrote, but my first book was an edited volume on Patricia Collins and the way in which her academic work and theory has pushed motherhood theory, particularly for black women, like forward in a lot of ways, like terms like other mothering and co-mothering and stuff like that. And because it was an edited volume, it wasn't as much, my burden.
That's a whole other kind of burden, though.
So editing others' work and compiling it and making it make sense and deciding which essays go where and so on and so forth. I think that my full manuscript, which I'm working on right now, it's considerably harder than doing the edited volume. And, but academic writing to me, because that's kind of my forte, is very, very easy. But for me, like when I think of novels, when I think of imagination and trying to create an alternative world, an alternative universe, like as a writer, I find I would be completely intimidated, overwhelmed, wouldn't be able to do it, Not at all. No. You know, it was the same thing. When I would, you know, I would write essays, I would tell my dad, he's a professor as well, so I would tell my dad, I'd say, I don't get how you can write poetry. Poetry is so hard. And he's like, one goes up and down, one goes left to right. You know, so like, you know, for him, poetry is his forte.
Yeah.
And, you know, novels, and he's an English professor, so those things speak to him more so than this kind of theoretical stuff I do.
Yeah.
But
I would get
I'm
so lost
like,
in what you do. I feel like I'd be tripping over my own feet, you know?
No, that's how I would feel. So I love to read novels, and I'm excited to read your work, but I would not be able to do it at all. No, no.
But does it come easy to you? Can you literally sit down? Like, how long does it take you, for example, this book here, Conspiracy of the Stars?
I wrote that in 4 months.
Really?
Yeah.
So you just sit down. Does it come to you? Do you have to call, like, pitch ideas off your boo? Like how does
my
one
boo,
go from start to finish?
My husband is, he is my muse, 100%.
Okay.
Like, I swear, that's why all my books are dedicated to him,
okay.
Because none of them would get written if it wasn't for him. I'm literally, right before we had our baby, this poor man, he's been paying all our bills since July.
Yeah.
And he was up at 1 a.m. and I was like, I need to walk through this whole plot with you. You know, we were editing, and that's how it works.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's easy. So that one came in 4 months. I wrote that so easily. My very first book I wrote, Panther in the Hive, was so easy. The editing on that, when you talk about editing and stuff, that was a beast. Yeah. But the sequel to this, which is out next year, with the same publisher, with HarperCollins, that was really hard to write.
Yeah.
It was like eight months of writing, and then like another three of editing, and then we have to do another couple rounds of editing. So sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. I wrote a middle grade thing. Middle grade is for middle schoolers more.
Okay.
It's like the younger, this is young
version.
Adult, and it's the younger audience underneath that. I wrote something for that in 2 months. So sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard.
Well, speaking of young adults and youth, you want to talk to our listeners about, I guess this is an exhibition that you're curating.
Yes.
And it's going to be in downtown Louisville. It's going to be later this spring in March.
Yeah.
It's called Kindred, Making Space in Space. And the question it poses is, what is After Earth for Women? Talk to us a bit about what this exhibition is, about the theme, and who you're looking for to participate.
Yes. So Kindred, actually, we're talking about Octavia Butler. The name of it is after one of her books, Kindred.
Yeah, I know that.
So I just love her and everything that she does. And she was taken far too soon. But this show is really kind of in honor of science fiction creators everywhere, women science fiction creators everywhere, in all different genres. And I think often the focus is on writing. And I'm a writer, but I'm also a faculty member at the Kentucky GSA, the summer program. So I teach writing.
Governor School for the Arts.
Yes, Governor School for the Arts. And so what I love about GSA is that it's for every discipline. You know, there's dancers, there's singers, there's painters, there's all these folks, and it brings all these kids together. And I kind of wanted to do like a miniature version of that, but around the theme of science fiction and around young women. That's particularly, you know, who I write for. So Kindred, Making Space in Space is... Yeah, on March 16th, we're going to have it at St. Francis High School, just around the corner from here, I guess. They have, I haven't been back in a long time, so I went back recently, and they have like a new gallery space, and they have some stage space. So what I'm trying to do is bring together young women between the ages of 10 and 21 who are creating art, and they don't necessarily always have to focus their work on sci-fi and futuristic stuff, but for this show, I'm looking for pieces that are around that. And I've gotten really amazing submission so far. I'm like, wait till you see this thing. It's nuts. I've got a young lady at Central High School that is submitting, she's in so much visual art. She takes, some things are digital. She'll take like selfies and then overlay digital things on them, like gas masks and all this kind of futuristic stuff. I've got, I don't know if you've heard of Sophia Dance Studio. So I've got, they're having a special audition. I know these kids are going to blow it out of the water. They're amazing. But they're going to do kind of like an interpretive dance, like around like the future. So I'm really just looking for more. I've got poetry, I've got visual art. You know, it's harder, I know, for like kids who sing, who use their vocals to like sing original works, you know, or if they I've got a young lady, I went to the Boys and Girls Club and I was looking for talent there, and I found a young lady who's going to make some visual art and also somebody who might sing. So really I'm just kind of looking for young creative women who are thinking about the future, and not the future like tomorrow, but the future in 100 years. You know, what does their tomorrow in 100 years look like? And I just really want to see different girls from all walks of life, what their imagining is, because that's the great thing about science fiction, is it all looks so different depending on your background.
Yes.
And the world that you're in now, it changes the way you see the world of tomorrow. So I just want it to be amazing. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be really great.
It sounds fantastic. How so tell our audience how they, when the deadline for submissions is,
yeah,
and when it's going to be. Like
yeah.
when the,
and how they
the
apply.
Opens
even,
and,
yeah.
sure. and how they apply, yeah.
Yeah, so the deadline is actually really soon. It's February 15th. I have been telling young women that if it doesn't have to be something new that they create for this. Okay. If it's existing work and they think it meshes with the theme of the show, they're welcome to submit that too. Oh, I should mention also that they get paid $50. So this is a pay gig.
Yes.
Especially young women. Women are too often asked to work for free.
Yeah,
you know this,
very
I'm sure.
True.
And artists too, as everyone in this room I'm sure knows. Mm. So, you know, I really wanted to offer money. So I'm taking it out of my advance, actually, my book advance, and I'm paying every artist that's selected $50.
I love that.
So that the deadline is the 15th, so it's coming up. But the show itself is March 16th, and they can apply by going to my website, oliviaacole.com, and there's a special section that says Kindred Making Space in Space, and they can click through. There's a link that goes to Submittable Online, and they can submit their materials there. If they have a video of them dancing or video of them singing, they can submit everything right there.
And just to be clear, the theme is there. You provide the theme, but, mm-hmm. but where they go with that theme is totally up to them.
All up to them.
And they can use any medium, poetry, short fiction, visual art,
yep.
instrumental, dance, vocal, fashion, monologues,
yep.
around the theme of what does the future look like for girls and women.
Yep.
And so listeners, perhaps you or someone you know would be perfect for this project. Please go to Olivia's website, check it out, y'all. The $50 can't hurt, you know, that helps.
Yeah.
You know, it's your child's allowance, you know what I'm saying? Save yourself some bucks. But really, y'all, Louisville has some wonderful, wonderful artists. Sorry, if you're out of town, y'all, sorry, you're out of luck, but that's just how awesome Louisville is. But really, y'all, please check out Olivia's site and encourage the young people in your life to participate. And then for us grown people, we can buy tickets, come to the show.
Yes.
How can we check out the work?
So yeah. come on March 16th. It's a free show, but I will be asking for donations, and that will also go towards the honorarium. I'm going to cover as many as I can, but that will go towards honorariums, and I'm trying to get, like, you know, some cake, and then I'm paying to
punch,
get stuff
know,
like
yeah.
that. I'm actually paying for a couple students to have the visual art have it matted, so things like that. Everything's going to go
I
towards
love that.
The show.
I love it.
But that way, if they want to sell their work, they can, because it will be matted, so they'll get $50 from me, and then if somebody's like, hey, how much is that, you know, and they can sell their work there.
That's
so
wonderful.
Yeah, I'm so excited, you know.
I'm really excited for it too. It's going to be wonderful.
My last request before you go, Olivia, once you sell the rights to the book for a movie, Can you give me a role? Can I, if you have like a Denzel-esque character, the sexy hero with swag,
you know,
this audible, like
the only sexy hero there is like younger than all of us. But you know, things can happen.
Yeah,
there can
you
be,
know,
you know,
it's the
new
future.
Character.
You can
right?
rewrite it. You know what I'm saying? Olivia, it's a delight to have you.
Thank you
so
much
for being here. Have you had fun?
It. Thank you. I
Please
have
come
so
back.
Much.
Thanks,
listeners,
Olivia.
Thanks, y'all.
We are out of time. Y'all, hope y'all had a good time. Thanks again to Grant Barrett for Words of the Year. Thank you to Clarkeisha Kent. She was a riot for the top 10 ways that Black people won last year. And of course, thanks to author Olivia A. Cole. Doc, we're out of time. Say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information, visit strangefruitpod.org, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at strangefruitpod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of LPM, its staff, or its underwriters.
Our executive producers are me, Jason Gardner.
And me, Kyla Story.
Thanks for listening.